Chapter 5. Celine. The digital clock resting on the mantel read 10:30 in the morning. Only 2 minutes had passed since the last time Kenneth Dearhorn stared at it. The air in his office grew stale among the quietness. Only 3 tables with 4 chairs positioned evenly throughout the room kept him company. He straightened his white tie and repositioned himself on his plushy office chair. The television was turned off, and the only noise he heard was the motor cooling down the soda machine in the corner. It wasn't a space he enjoyed spending much of his day in. 2 days ago, Joanne, his assistant, handed him a package mailed from the Brotherhood headquarters in San Diego. Inside the package, Kenneth found a letter written by Mr. Austin with orders for the Minneapolis chapter. At first, Kenneth thought the Brotherhood had changed its mind again and decided to abandon the chapter. Anything seemed possible, especially with the fact that Mr. Austin continued to be concerned for his daughter's well-being among the demon. Somehow Kenneth found it in himself to not question his boss's actions. Promoted to region leader of the Midwest Division, a position Mr. Austin once held for decades, he treaded carefully when it came to the old man. He followed Mr. Austin's orders persistently. His researchers under his care stayed out of demon affairs, only to watch them from the shadows like researchers did before them. If it were up to him, his researchers would annihilate the demon instead of researching them. A lot had occurred since the last time Mr. Austin left Minneapolis, and Kenneth grew irritated that Mr. Austin didn't seem to care. Demon had evolved. Dethroning Kai meant the demon could gather, plot, and continue their nefarious affairs. They didn't fear the Brotherhood anymore. In fact, they welcomed the confrontation. All of this didn't bother Mr. Austin. All he thought about was his daughter, Veronica. Kenneth believed the old man had lost his way. Last night he received word from one of his researchers about a massacre at a sanctuary just south of the city. An anonymous tip led police to the carnage. They counted 15 bodies ripped to shreds. The bloodbath had demon written all over it. It reminded Kenneth of the other ravaged sanctuaries in the city. Maybe it was Lucius's way of regaining control and weeding out anyone associated with Kai. When he told Mr. Austin, the old man did nothing. It was then that Kenneth began to concoct a plan that would place him as the president of the Midwest Division, thus securing him a definite place among the most respected members of the Brotherhood. He needed to show the other prominent members that Mr. Austin was no longer fit and that he was the only one who could save the Midwest Division from complete shambles. To do this, he had to go to San Diego and schedule a secret meeting with the presidents of the West Division and East Division and somehow get them on his side. With their support, he could finally speak with the headmaster. The man who ran the whole organization, the most powerful man in the Brotherhood, Marcel Alvaro. By telling Mr. Alvaro everything that Mr. Austin did and didn't do, he knew that the headmaster would immediately demote Mr. Austin from his position. He'd reveal to them that secret deal he made with Celine to get rid of Kai. At the time, Kenneth stood by the decision, hoping that by remaining loyal, he'd become region leader. As the old man constantly looked over his shoulder, criticizing the chapter, it was then that Kenneth realized that Mr. Austin placed his own daughter's well-being over the Brotherhood itself. Mr. Austin had to go. Kenneth heard the sharp clicks of a woman's high heels in the hallway. A female researcher walked past the office with her eyes focused on a portfolio she carried in her hands. He watched her stroll by, and he sighed. He pulled back the curtains, blocking the window behind him, letting the sun shine through. He watched solemnly as the cars and trucks drove by, pedestrians walking in groups on the wet pavements, conversing with each other. Wet garbage tumbled across the sidewalk. The loudspeaker on his desk beeped, and he jumped. "Kenneth!" Joanne's voice sounded mechanical. "You have a visitor." Kenneth pressed the speaker button. "I'm not expecting anyone. Tell them to make an appointment." I don't think that's possible." "Make it possible." He glanced around the office. Long black leather couches sat in the middle of the room, surrounded by a glass table. Pictures and photographs of wildlife. A scenic image of downtown San Diego at night. Flowers. The picture of Earth from space. And other photographs of important figures in the Brotherhood lined the white walls. He thought about the pending conversation and how the presidents of the West and East Divisions would take his information. They respected loyalty and the truth. If they knew how Mr. Austin had involved himself in demon affairs, they'd take away his position immediately. "Hello, Kenneth," a sultry female voice said. He turned to look toward the front door of his office. A woman, who he only knew by first name, stood in the doorway grinning back at him. Her carrot-coloured hair fell gently on her shoulders. She took off her black-brimmed hat and her dark raincoat. She held an umbrella in her left hand, and she slowly pulled her sunglasses to the rim of her nose, revealing her dark green eyes. She was the last person he expected to see, and he didn't understand how she had made it through the front door unless she'd murdered Joanne and the other researchers in the front portion of the chapter's office. She was Celine, offspring of Lucius, who was the most powerful Lugat demon in America. "Don't worry, I didn't kill your human workers." She read his mind as clear as day. Kenneth cleared his throat. He looked over her shoulder, staring back at his assistant, Joanne, who shrugged her shoulders. "It's okay. It'll only be a moment." She nodded and quickly closed the door shut. "I thought sunlight was bad for your kind." He watched Celine drape her raincoat over her forearm. Her eyes moved from left to right, scanning the room. "Umbrellas do come in handy." She slowly walked toward him. Her tongue glazed over her full lips. "And it'd take more than a small speck of sunshine to harm me." She approached him, moving her hips seductively from side to side. Her outfit did wonders for her small frame, breaking his concentration. He was sure that it'd only take seconds before her skin started to bubble from the sun, but he assumed her response was her cocky way of saying she couldn't be harmed. She tossed her belongings on his desk and glanced around the room. "We have business to discuss." "I don't discuss business with your kind," he quickly retorted. His eyes quickly glanced underneath his office desk. Somewhere there had to be a distress call button used in situations like this, but he couldn't find it. "Sorry to intrude." She lowered herself in a chair and crossed her legs. "We haven't spoken to each other since that night." He lowered himself in his chair, and like all well-trained researchers, he proceeded to block his thoughts from her by imagining a red brick wall. He didn't know what she wanted, but he was sure it wasn't good. After Celine left the office the last time he had seen her, he spent the majority of his free time researching her past. He ordered old researcher files from the Brotherhood's San Diego office to be sent to him. In a month's time, he knew about her human life in the 800s, growing up as the daughter of the chief in a remote tribe located in this country now known as Scandinavia. Her human mother became just one of the many wives the chief had. Celine, whose human name was Ingrid, had older and younger brothers. She worshipped the teachings of Freya, the Norse warrior goddess of love and beauty. It was a fight her clan had against another rival clan, which created an opening for Lucius, who saved Celine from being killed, to sire her. Centuries after being sired, she stayed close by Lucius's side, worshipping him like any follower would. Needless to say, Celine convinced Lucius to reconcile with his sister and Anastasia's maker, Lucia, when they were at each other's throats centuries later. The only recorded incident of Celine's disapproval for Lucius was when Lucius sired Kai in the 1840s. Even then, she didn't trust her new Lugat sibling. However, she remained loyal, so it made perfect sense to Kenneth that Celine would be the one to come to Lucius's aid once she heard that Kai had placed Lucius in limbo. "You don't need to block your thoughts from me, Kenneth. I didn't come here to spy on you." "It's a precaution." He leaned back in his chair, like second nature. "We need to work on that trust thing if we're going to work together," she replied, He forced a weak smile on his face, knowing that he only tolerated her because Mr. Austin ordered it. He felt that the organization could handle Kai, Lucius, or any daemon on their own. They had the knowledge and the power to do so. Only if Veronica didn't cloud the old man's judgment. She was his weak link, and the demon in Minneapolis knew that. "I think it's against a demon's nature to even speak of the word trust," he said. "Well, Kenneth, you forget that we were once human. Just because we aren't now doesn't mean that we've forgotten our roots." "Forgive me if I find that funny. What do you want, Celine?" "Business. Mr. Austin isn't here." "I know." He tapped his fingers on the edge of his desk. A moment of silence followed their conversation. He continued to block his thoughts. Along with her precarious nature, he knew she never failed at reading them. He didn't want to give her any opportunity of scouring his deepest ones. Kenneth twiddled his thumbs, then replied, "So whatever business you have is between you and him." "What if I want business to be done between you and me?" He leaned back in his chair. "He's the president of this chapter, not me." "Are you sure of that?" She lazily waved her hand. "Your thoughts and desires tell me otherwise." Kenneth didn't reply. "That's why I like you, human." She slightly shook her head. "So cocky that it's almost cute." Kenneth smiled coldly. Even though the demon didn't breathe, she exhaled. "But the Brotherhood has something I want, something that doesn't belong to them." He folded his arms against his chest. "And what makes you think I can get whatever that is for you?" "Because I will give you what you desire in return." He shook his head in disfavor. Dealing with demon was like playing with a Rubik's Cube. He could never solve it, no matter how hard he tried. He stood up from his chair and lowered his arms. "I'm not like Mr. Austin. I don't make deals with demon." He walked from behind his desk. "And I'm not going to start now." He stood mere feet from her with no desire to get any closer. He knew she was a Lugat, and he knew how they fed from humans. "But you haven't heard what I want, and what I could give you in exchange for it." "What could I possibly want from you, Celine?" Instead of backing away from her strong advances, like he was trained to do, Kenneth held his composure. She stood up and walked to the opposite side of his desk. Her fingers moved along the rim of the desk and concentrated. Kenneth watched as she slowly absorbed the psychic imprints left on the edge, just like a Lugat needed to do to feed. "Hmm." Her eyes fluttered and her lips curled in exhilaration. "What woman did you have on your desk?" He remained silent. He knew the imprint she felt within her was Joanne's. Celine clasped her hands. "Mr. Austin represents the Brotherhood in its former glory." She walked to him. "But he's old and tired." She stood in front of him. "And I need a younger and stronger human for what's to come. Like I said, I don't make deals with demon." "You desire power." She placed her cold hand alongside his left cheek and she leaned in, planting her lips on his right. "I could give that to you, you know. Power." Kenneth's eyes squinted. "This is your chance to become the president of the Midwest Division. That is what you want, right?" It was exactly what he wanted. His father wanted that position back when Nathan Tiernan and Veronica's mother were just researchers. After he was killed by a demon, Mr. Austin took over the position, closed down the division, and had Kenneth and his daughter move to San Diego. Since then, he craved the spot. He could taste it on the tip of his tongue. Still, he didn't need a demon to get what he desired. He placed his hands on her shoulders and pushed her back. "If you think I'd betray the Brotherhood for you..." Celine laughed. "No, you wouldn't." She brushed his cheek with her hand. "Still, I know what you want and what you'd do to get a taste of that power. I've never lost sight of this world and how it has changed. Everyone, everything, desires to be on top. That is your desire, is it not?" She gently removed his hands from her shoulders. Kenneth's face drew blank as he stared into her sultry green eyes. He had to admit, she read him like a book. But he could never find himself working with a D-man to achieve his ultimate goal. He was strong and influential enough to do that on his own. "What is this thing that you need, Celine?" he asked in a whisper. "There's a piece of a clay tablet in the Brotherhood's archives in San Diego." "A clay tablet?" "Yes, in the archives that you researchers guard so perfectly. Filled with antiques, old documents, and other assorted historical objects dating back to the first days of the Brotherhood, the archives was perfectly guarded by a state-of-the-art security system and mercenaries willing to risk their lives to protect their valuable information. Once housed in Chicago, that all came crashing down when the building was attacked by D-Man and burnt to the ground decades ago. All new researchers were taken to the archives at least one time in their life to reflect on the importance of being part of the organization. He had no way of getting in there unless he got special permission from the higher-ups, someone like Mr. Austin, or better yet, Mr. Alvaro. Kenneth huffed. "I've only been down there once, and I don't remember seeing a clay tablet or a piece of a clay tablet." "It's there." She placed her hand on his cheek. "Hidden oh so well by the researchers who came before you." He gently removed her hand from his cheek. "Have you heard of the Dark Curse?" Through all his life as a researcher, he believed he knew everything about the demon, but he had never heard of the Dark Curse. "No, I haven't. Is that what it is?" "That clay tablet piece is part of a historical document on the beginnings of my kind. It doesn't belong to humans." She grabbed his wrist and she slowly sat him down in the chair. "Get it for me, and I will give you power. It must be of some value if you want it that badly." "It belongs to the demon, not researchers." She straddled him and lowered herself onto his crotch. "Have you read the Havamal, Kenneth?"
"No."
"Uncomfortable," Kenneth replied in a shaky voice. "I thought your organization researched human history as well as D-Man history." She again placed her hand on his cheek. "We study both." Again, Kenneth grabbed her hand and removed it. "There's a quote in the Havamal." She leaned into his right ear. "It was a popular text for my people in the old days. In fact, I missed it so much that I had my human minions find me a copy and bring it to me." She placed her hand over his stomach and began to massage his skin. His body shuddered and he desperately wanted her to let go. But the more she wheedled, the more he enjoyed it. "I read it over and over, and suddenly, it came to me one day. After hundreds of years, I finally understood what it all meant." He watched as her eyes slowly reverted from green to black, a signature sign of a demon. "One quote fueled me to seek revenge against those who chained Lucius to the dark. It motivated me to go out and seek my desires, or what you humans say, to get mine." She lowered her voice to a whisper. "Wake early if you want another man's life or land. No lamb for the lazy wolf. No battles won in bed." Kenneth felt his body growing weak. She was feeding from him. He immediately pushed her away, and he moved to his feet. Celine's eyes reverted to green. She licked the corners of her mouth. "I need it by the end of the week." She grabbed her jacket and umbrella. "And in return, you'll just clap your hands and make me powerful." Kenneth spoke in a sarcastic tone. "In return, Lucius will kill Mr. Austin, and you will be president of the Midwest Division." She dressed herself.
"Lucius?
Remember, 1 week." She opened the door and walked out of his office. Kenneth stood frozen. The thought of Lucius killing Mr. Austin wasn't the path he wanted to take. He rubbed his chin in thought and watched as Joanne quietly stepped into the room. "Are you okay?" she asked.
"Yes, I'm fine."
"We need to report her visit to Mr. Austin immediately."
"No,"
Kenneth quickly replied.
"Not yet. I'll do it."
"But Kenneth..."
"Joanne, I said I'll do it."
He took a deep breath. "I need you to schedule a flight for us to San Diego immediately." He raked his fingers through his hair. "I need access to the archives."
"Oh, okay,"
Joanne nervously replied. "Access to what in the archives specifically?" Kenneth stared at Joanne before replying, "I need access to the Dark Curse."